All right, here we go. My name is Bromo, and this is There Is a Way Out. It's the 15th of May. This is my 35th already. Sure goes by quick. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/17/09. I am not an expert. I don't have a certificate. I have not gone to school or any classes for this. I hope that people, my hope is that people listen to these and either learn or gain something from my story or my guest's story, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I've told my story many times before. My hope is, again, is that people who are on the fence or somebody has a friend or a family member that they believe may have an issue with drinking or drugs, that they can listen to this and say that there is a way out. Again, my strengths are easily my guests. I've had so many great guests on who come on willingly, and they're honest, and they tell their story. And they tell their story of how they got started, what they did to go on to a better life, and what they do today. And my next guest is awesome. I met this gentleman, what do you think, Jay, about a month ago at the Dakota Home Show and here in Bismarck. What do you think that was, about a month ago or so?
Yeah, it was April something. It was the garden show, actually.
The garden show, yep. This is Jay Dobo. I call you Dobo. That's right, right?
That works. I kind of rebranded myself after I got straightened out.
Well, we're going to talk about his business and how hot it is, literally, in a few. this is where I met him. I went up to his at this garden show. It's in a big, huge, kind of an arena, smaller arena in Bismarck here, and they have all kinds of vendors set up, all kinds of things set up for your home and things like that. And here's Jay with his products in the very back, and we're talking, and I don't know what led to me showing my tattoo off, but I think you leaned over and said, I've been sober for how long? Do you remember that discussion?
Yeah, over 2 years. I showed you the coin my therapist gave me.
That's right. Because you saw my tattoo, and I'm bragging away, and you said, "Well, check this out," and I could relate to you. I could relate to you right away. I have all my tokens at home on a big, huge keychain, and I'm proud of every single one of them. As well, you are. I saw this beaming look on his face, and I asked you a few questions, and I really loved how warm and friendly you were, and how proud of you. How proud of yourself you are of that token. You want to tell everybody again your sobriety date, roughly?
Yeah, it's April 4th, 2022, and is when I quit drinking.
You want to tell everybody how unbelievably awesome is when that date rolls around? Because mine, of course, I just had not long ago, back in February. And when that date comes around, it's my favorite day of the year. I could care less about my birth date, but it's my greatest day. How do you feel on that? Don't you just feel special and you were just on a high?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I feel the same. Like everybody, there's people at work that go around, what's my birthday? It's my birthday. Like, ooh, you've been around the sun one more time, you know?
Yeah,
I've gone around the sun without drinking another time. So, yeah, how about them apples?
Now, where are you from, Jay?
I'm originally from Winslow, Arizona.
Oh, see? So, I'm from San Diego. So, what made you move out to Bismarck?
A daggone woman.
Oh. We'll talk about that a little bit too in a little bit, and yeah, it's something I haven't heard yet, but he asked me off the air if we could talk somewhat about relationships, and of course relationships have a big part, as you know, in sobriety and drinking and such. What was your choice? Are you an alcoholic, or did you dabble in both, drugs?
No,
and booze?
I played around with like some hard drugs back in the day, but no, just alcohol.
Okay, how old are you, you don't mind me asking?
I'm old enough to have to think about it.
Yeah.
Let's see, I will be 47 next week.
Good grief. Oh, wait a minute. When next week?
The 21st.
I'm the 20th, pal. No kidding.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I know. Everybody always says, are you in the cusp? What are you, a Taurus or a blah, blah, blah? And I don't even...
Right, and that's... Well, the first time that somebody said that to me, I was buying alcohol in California, and
right,
somebody's like, "Oh, you're on the cusp, huh?" When they checked my ID, and I was like, "What's the cusp?"
I'm like, "I'm wearing pants. I'm not naked or anything." No, the cusp. No, the signs, man, the signs. What kind of personality do you fit? The Taurus, or what is after Taurus? Gemini.
It's Taurus and Gemini. Yep.
Yeah,
and
so, yeah.
My birthday is on the Taurus changeover date.
Oh, so you're
on most of the calendars.
Okay, so people say, so what are you? What's your personality? Are you like a Taurus or Gemini? I don't know. Let me just buy this booze and get out of here. That's funny. Hey, well, way to go, buddy. Awesome. So you're young. I have shoes that are older than you.
We should hang out then. That makes me feel young.
We should. Now, do you have any plans for your birthday? Just real quick.
Actually, I'm going to be going to it was Brother Brandon's throwing a going away party. He's doing a big broil.
Okay.
Boil?
Yeah.
Crawfish boil. So he invited me, and I kind of just hijacked it and made it my own little celebration, too. So I'm bringing like 200 oysters, and I'm smoking a salmon today.
Oh.
So it should be a pretty good time.
I have to tell you, because of this podcast, I've been pretty grateful and lucky to kind of enter the small circle. It's actually a bigger circle than most people think, but I've entered the kind of circle of some friends here. Brother Brandon, who's just flat out awesome. He was on my podcast a while ago. As a matter of fact, he filmed a Facebook Live as I did my podcast at the same time. You probably heard about that.
Yeah, I actually watched it.
Oh, you did?
I watched it live.
God bless you.
I was the one commenting on there.
oh, that's okay. Right on. Well, I wasn't able to see the comments he was. But we have some other friends that are in the circle, and Jay is very good friends with Brother Brandon. And this is what happens when you enter the cool environment of sobriety and you meet other people. Now, tell everybody, did you drink when you were young? How did you get started?
Yeah. See, my biological father was an alcoholic, and he committed suicide while he was doing drugs and whatnot. So my mom was remarried, and when I was like, I think 8 or 9 years old, they thought it'd be a good idea to get me drunk on tequila and get me sick, like the old Cure, you know? But I knew from the very beginning I was an alcoholic because I didn't know I was an alcoholic at 9 years old. But I woke up in the morning and I was like, well, where's them shots of tequila at? I want to drink some more.
Okay, real quick, Jay, you know, kind of by listening to some of my podcasts, I always have to tell everybody and I always have to pre-apologize because a lot of times I interrupt and I don't mean that. I just mean because I want to say something real quick and I don't want that thought to go away. So you said that this was your stepfather who took his life?
No, my biological.
Your biological. I'm so sorry. How old were you when that happened?
Right. I was 8 years old.
And you said he was drinking and using drugs, and it just took his life. He wanted to check out.
Yeah. It was back then in '85. There wasn't like such thing as depression or anything like that.
Right.
And nobody knew how to, you know, just like they would just slap you on the butt and tell you, you know, what's wrong with you? You're a man. Act like it.
No, I'm so sorry, dude. I can't even imagine that. I can't.
Yeah. Well, you know, you kind of get used to it after what has been 40 years now. Holy crap.
So somebody introduced you to tequila when you were what age?
I was probably like 9.
Pretty nasty stuff, man. Like they didn't want to give you a beer or anything to drink with your uncles or whatever. Tequila. Yikes.
Yeah. Shots of tequila with the lime and the salt and all that crap. Well, they were trying to get me sick.
Right.
And it backfired on them.
So you wound up kind of embracing that feeling of, you know, that warm feeling after the third or fourth drink where everything's good and you're... What kind of drunk were you? Were you active? Were you loud? Were you mellow? Were you a participant?
I was giddy, like a goofy drunk.
Yeah.
But like the first day. But then the second and third day, I would just lose my brain and I wouldn't know what I don't know. Sometimes I'd be violent. Sometimes I don't know. I woke up in jail. I don't know how many times. Like, what the heck?
See, this is what's funny. I can tell by your laugh already. And I've only been around you once. In person, I could tell by your laugh already, you're a real hoot when you're a life of the party and just you're contagious when someone else laughs like you do. Or you should like put a speaker on you and so you can laugh at my stupid jokes when I'm on the radio. That would really help me.
give you the boost. I'll just record them for you and then you can insert here.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of my jokes that make people laugh. Trust me. So get back into your. So, you have any brothers and sisters?
I have. It gets complicated. You know how everybody is nowadays.
Yeah, that's okay.
So, my mom and my biological father had me and my little sister.
Okay.
And then when my biological dad, they divorced. He ended up having another daughter with his girlfriend.
Right.
And then when my mom remarried, I was adopted, and then I was adopted into my stepdad had two sons and two daughters.
Okay. So where you lived most of your childhood, did you live in a pretty stable house with other kids around? Were they scattered all
around? Of course.
Okay, cool.
No, my mom was the den mother,
yep.
The Sunday school teacher.
Yep.
You know, she was trying to make up for, you know, my stepdad was like 15 years older than her. And
right.
So he was kind of like, he was my age when they ended up getting married. So he was kind of like tired of kids already. So
now,
he didn't want to really have much to do with me.
So when you were in high school, did your parents drink around you? Were they still active in that?
No. My dad, Calvin, he just my dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, he would have a six-pack in the fridge for till I'd take it.
You know what? I was just talking about somebody today and trying to describe what a normie is. And you know what a normie is. You just described
yeah.
A normie is yep. Somebody you go over to their house and you say, Jesus, the six-pack has been in there, I know, since Thanksgiving. And it's still there.
Exactly.
There ain't no way that would be around. That you couldn't even see the bottle caps around. Where
well, see, what I used to do to try to, like, to time myself out,
yeah.
Because there's only two places in Hebron that you can buy booze,
yeah.
And that's at the bars.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would wait till about 10 o'clock at night,
yep.
And then I'd buy myself an 18-pack. And then I knew by the time I got done with that 18-pack, the bars would be closed, and then I wouldn't be able to go get more.
And this is where?
That was how
Hebron?
In Hebron, yes.
I've never tell everybody where that is for those who do not know where it's at.
It's right in between Bismarck and Dickinson on the interstate. It's the Brick City. There's a big brick factory here.
I don't know if I've ever... have I ever driven through that way? Do you go that? So I'm so bad with. I'm
you'll
so
drive
bad
when
with
you
maps.
Go down to Dickinson on I-94. You'll drive right by it, but it's about 2 miles off the interstate.
I've never
so
been.
You can't
I've never
really
been
see
to
it.
Dickinson. I don't think. When you okay?
Oh man. Oh,
okay, real quick. When you leave from Fargo, like Castleton, and you're moving to Bismarck. What is that road you take? 94 or whatever.
Yeah, 94.
Does that pass through Dickinson?
Yeah, that runs all the way across the middle of the state.
Okay, I know where it is because somebody once told me, and sorry for my friends and such who are like, I don't even know much about North Dakota, but they told me when I moved from Fargo to Minot, they said there's a certain part of the drive that's going to bore the hell out of you for about an hour and a half, and you probably know what there it is, don't you, right before Bismarck, right?
Pretty much the whole state.
So you're in that area where there's nothing out there, correct?
Yeah, the drive-by of the flyby.
Now, what are you doing in that area? Because you came from Arizona. What are you doing in that area? Tell everybody why you ended up there.
Okay, well, I met a woman when I was working for the railroad in California. She had three sons, and I don't know, it just clicked. There was something I just knew. I thought she was my soulmate, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Anyway, I had just got out of the Marines, and she wanted to go in.
Thank you for your service, by the way. Thank you.
Of course. It was my pleasure.
Awesome. Okay, continue.
She wanted to join the Army as an officer and fly helicopters. And I was like, you will go to war. She's like, I have three sons. Nobody's going to send me to war, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so we moved up here.
Yep.
And to be next to her mom so she could help me with the kids while she was in boot camp.
Yeah.
And then that Gulf War fired up. And she saw that, I think her name was Jessica Lynch or whatever.
Oh,
the one that got
yeah.
held hostage by the Iraqis.
Right.
And I was like, boom, there you go, right there.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, oh, my goodness. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what I told you. They don't care anymore nowadays.
Yeah.
Women
no.
are in combat.
Right, right. So,
and, yeah.
We'll touch
so
on that
scared.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to find out why you were in Hebron. Anyway, when you went into high school, were you still drinking and having a good time and carrying on with that lifestyle?
Oh, yeah. See, when I started drinking pretty hard in about eighth grade, I think. See, we have natives in Winslow.
Yeah.
Because the Navajo Nation is dry reservation.
Right.
So we have a bunch of natives that'll come to town and they'll just start drinking and then they'll just hang out at like the gas stations and stuff like that. So it's not anything for a kid to go up to one of them and be like, hey, I'll give you a couple bucks if you buy me a bottle or whatever.
So eighth grade, you said, right? Eighth grade?
Yeah, eighth grade is when I first got like like did my own solo drinking.
And so you're hitting it every day, pretty much, right? Yeah. As much as you could.
I've never been really an everyday drinker.
Okay.
Anytime that I drank, I was always one of those that would just go until I passed out or I ran out of booze. And sometimes I would last like 2-3 days.
Okay. Did you ever get in trouble?
And then I would
seriously trouble.
Oh, always in trouble.
What for? Underage drinking or what?
When I was a kid. Let me see. I got arrested for theft and minor consumption when I was a kid.
Okay.
Because there was this girl that worked at the gas station, and she would just let me act like I was paying for it for the camera and then leave. So right. She was going to get in trouble, so yeah. She said, "Oh, it's Jason Parsons. He lives right over." You know, like, oh, my goodness.
She ratted you out.
She ratted me out.
So did you have to do jail time? I mean, you went in for a little bit or what?
Well, I was underage, and I was living on my own, actually, because I had run away. I had my own apartment.
Holy moly. How old were you when you had your own apartment?
17. I was right on the cusp there, turning 18.
How did you make money enough to pay rent and have your own apartment? Pretty impressive.
My mother was actually gracious enough. I had a job at Taco Bell, but my mother was actually gracious enough to give me my Social Security checks from my father.
Oh, okay. Well, right on. So you lived on your own. Did you find that lonely, or were you having a ball? Were you having a blast?
I was having a blast. Yeah, I had my buddy that graduated a couple years before me. He was my roommate.
Yep.
So yeah, we just had a good old time. But then when I got arrested, the cops they thought I was 18. They were gonna put me in the clink, and then they're like, "Oh, we gotta call your dad." I was like, "Oh, I'd rather go to jail."
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so my dad had to come bail me out, and that was the end of my, I the last 2 months before I went to boot camp, I was back at the house.
So what was boot camp life? Was it tough? Was it as hard as you thought?
You know what? Mentally, it was really difficult, but physically, I was a wrestler in Arizona, so that was the physical part of that was nothing. I don't have trash bags on. I can run for miles.
Let's talk about the mental part, though. Was it because now you're under a routine, a little bit more strict? You're not able to drink, probably. You can't get away unless they give you leave, right? Boot camp, they just keep you there until you're out of boot camp, right? Until you've moved to the next level, right?
Yeah, it's not like the Army boot camp. It's 3 months of just on the base.
On the base.
You get visitor Sunday, like the week before you graduate.
Right.
Your parents can come out and, like, you can show them around a little bit.
Right.
For like maybe an hour or something. I don't really remember. This has been a long time ago. And then you get out of there. But I just remember marching in boot camp and then being there for like a month. And you could smell, like when it was visitor Sunday, you could smell like perfume and stuff like that like miles away. Just like, ooh.
Well,
did anybody
ever try to smother booze in? You know, smuggle booze in?
One of my buddies, though, he was from Alaska. He actually had one of his buddies or something slipped in a can of Copenhagen.
Oh, God, really?
And so, yeah, I was hooked on it back then, boy. And that was we were all hiding in the middle of the night. I had a little pinch.
I have to tell you, Jay, I've only done chewing tobacco once in my life, and it was a long time ago when I was working at a restaurant. After shots and beers, this guy's chewing tobacco, and he goes, "You want to see what this is like?" I said, "Yeah, that's got to be like shredded wheat or gum, like, right? Give me some of that." And about a minute and a half later, man, I stood up, and I could barely walk. I could barely make it to the restroom. My spins were the most violent spins, lightheaded, I've ever had. Oh, it was awful. Oh.
My big brother did that to me. My parents used to let me chew Hawkins. And that is like bubble gum, basically. It's just really light stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I'll cure him."
Yeah.
And so we were out fishing, and he hands me his Copenhagen, and I took a pinch, and he's like, "Nah, you need, come on, bro, what's that?" And I took a bit, come on. So I ended up looking like a chick buck by the time he was done with me. And boy, I got the spins. I threw up.
It
cured me for a while. Yeah.
So you get out of so you go through boot camp without drinking, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Did you crave it? Did you miss it?
No, not really.
See?
You don't really have time to think about it in there, though.
Well, you got time to think about all the stuff they're handling you. And are they yelling at you? Because back in the day, they would portray movies as the sergeants or whatever you call it. They would yell at you. Hurry up!
Oh, I got hit. when I was in.
Is that right?
Yeah, we were running the head one day, and my buddy reached over and punched me, just playing around. So I cocked him back. Well, the drill instructor saw me hitting him, and so he calls me at attention. Hit me like you hit that recruit, and I just stood there. So he just started wailing on me, boy.
Well, so you were what age?
I was 18.
18. So he goes for 3 months worth of boot camp. You get out. And so when do you start drinking again? I mean, you said you weren't craving it. So there was no problem then, right, at 18?
No, yeah, instantly, though. My uncle, he was a Force Recon Marine, my biological dad's little brother.
Yeah.
So he came out to my graduation with a few other people that were part of his cul-de-sac, and they made a drunken promise to me when I was like 15 years old that if I went to the Marines, they would all be at my graduation. And sure enough, every single one of them showed up.
Oh, isn't that something?
And so what they did was they just took me to the bar. I remember the name of the bar and everything. It was called Hungry's in San Diego.
Yeah.
And with the yards of beer. And I was on after that.
You're over there by Point Loma area, by Rosecrans and by that Marine area over there, right? The Marine training and stuff like that, right? I think
The MCRD.
MCRD.
Yep.
Not Oceanside, but San Diego, right? MCRD.
Yeah, San Diego, yep. Yeah.
I know where you were.
Yeah, we do 2 months there and then 1 month in Camp Pendleton for weapons training.
Okay, well, the big thing about San Diego back then was when you got out or when you were on leave, did you ever make any visits towards any of the prominent San Diego girly bars where...
No, I was with my uncle. He he was trying to get me a tattoo, though, so we were driving around, and he was a cop.
Is that right?
He was a cop in Phoenix, so he was like, we'd get drunker than hell, and then he'd go, let me go get my badge.
So do you feel like when you're able to drink again, because now you've conquered boot camp, but how long do you have to stay in the, as a Marine, how long do you have to stay in the military before you're done?
4 years.
Okay, so when you were out of boot camp, you're able to drink now because they're really, you're not confined to a certain area and everything under Eagle Eye watch, but you can go off the base and drink.
No. When I was in, okay, you do 3 months of boot camp and then you got 3 months of a month of Marine combat training.
Okay, right.
Anyway, when I was in, you could drink on base beer at 18.
Okay.
You couldn't have any hard alcohol, but they would serve you in the E-clubs.
At that time of your life, that's a treat, isn't it?
Oh, man, yeah. That was the first time I peed in my pants.
Well, there you go. I mean, you're working your rear end off. You're getting strong. You're under supervision constantly, but now you can drink a beer at the age of 18.
In a bar and feel, you know, like a grown-up.
Right, but you're on base.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get out of the military, and then what do you do?
My brother was in big trouble. He took on, there was a bunch of strong winds in Winslow.
Okay.
And it blew a bunch of roofs off, so he took on, he was a licensed contractor, and he took on too many jobs.
Okay.
So he started crying to me, bro, come help me. So I helped him for about, I don't know, 6-7 months. We busted out all those roofs.
Did you know what to do? I mean, did he train you, or are you just...
Well, good? I grew up doing that stuff.
Oh, you and I are so not alike. You could put a hammer in my hand and say, hey, Bromo, take that hubcap off or whatever, and I'd find some way to cause some sort of catastrophe by hitting my hand or something. I was not inclined at all with any kind of that stuff, but you went out and helped with all the roofs and everything, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we just went to whoever would yell at us the loudest, you know, we better get over that. But yeah, to Miss So-and-so's house, because, she's been bothering me pretty good. So we got to where we did a whole roof before lunch one day.
So when does the drinking start to escalate for you? Tell us how you got kicked back in, how you felt like, this is going to be now a part of my life. It was a long time ago when I was 8 or 8th grade, but tell us how alcohol started taking over your life.
Oh, that was in the Marines for sure.
Okay.
Definitely. Like I said, we could drink on base, and then Clinton came in and he changed the law to 21.
Right.
So then I was like, well, screw that. I'm old enough to die for my country, but you can't let me have booze.
Yeah.
So screw all you guys. So I would end up drinking on base and then end up, you know, fighting other Marines from different, you know, companies or whatever, because we all thought we were tough and what are you doing over this? You know, blah, 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 just idiots.
Yeah.
And so the first time I actually was sent to treatment was in, what is that, Point Loma, I think? San Diego, the Navy base there?
Yep, that's what I was saying before. But I have a quick question. But you said that the ages were changed to 21. How were you able to sneak in and drink? Were you able to, you just were able to...
No, the barracks are kind of like a frat house, pretty much.
Okay.
The guard, the duty, he couldn't like control. He, especially me, they try, but
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, you are a pretty big guy. I remember you at meeting you. But so, how did it turn that somebody suggested, well, maybe we got to put you in a treatment? I mean, that had to be some turn of events that were not good.
Yeah, I got in trouble for we all got in a big brawl one day, and all of us got arrested. And then I was in the drunk tank, and the MPs were whacking me with their flashlights and stuff. And so I finally calmed down, and I saw the sergeant major. And I said, hey, Sergeant Major, why are you letting these Marines whoop up on me? And he's like, you're drunk and underage. Who are they going to believe, you or me? And oh, my gosh, I started going crazy, dude.
Yeah. Did any of them did any of them question you and say, hey, man, maybe, you know, when you calm down, maybe you should think about getting some help? Did anyone see any constructive part of anything going on? I mean,
no, none of the MPs, no, they weren't like that. But I had like sergeants and gunnies that were like, they love me, but they're like, you got a problem there, guy.
Yeah, because they're older than you, those guys, right? And they've had life experience. They've seen men come and go, and they've seen how alcohol can take certain people. So you went to a place in Point Loma. You said it was a outpatient plan where you went and saw some people. Then
no, this was inpatient. I was there for 5 weeks.
What'd you think of it? Were you scared going in? I mean, you're a tough guy.
I was scared to go in, but once I got in there, it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I liked my therapist was our counselor. He was a Navy guy. He was one of the nicest guys I ever met.
Okay, I have to stop you for a second because I'm very curious. You're a big, tough guy. You're, you know, you just got through boot camp. You're beating up people right here. There's that stupid Bromo Radio guy. Let's kick him.
I'm retired, Bromo.
No, but wait a minute. You know what I'm talking about back then. Tough guy thing. And then you get sent. You're told you're going to go to a treatment place for 5 weeks. Why did that scare you?
Just the fear of the unknown, I suppose. What are they going to do to me? I was in the hospital for 4 weeks, and then they had this thing that was called Credo. I don't remember exactly what it stood for, but it was for people that were like losing focus on their jobs, and it was for like mostly like officers and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay.
So they sent me and then like four or five people from treatment to that retreat.
Okay.
And there's these officers and stuff crying about how hard their job is and stuff like that. We were all like hardcore, you know, in treatment, like, whoa, how does that make you feel? It? Blah, 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 blah. Just like really light into them.
Well, not, you know, I never try to make light of anything. However, in this treatment, did anyone ever talk to you about your youth? Did you ever talk about your losing your father to suicide and disease? Did you ever bring that out? Did that ever?
Yeah, because I remember I was actually engaged to a woman Marine.
Okay.
And she would complain all the time to me about how her dad was a cop and he never showed up to her softball games and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
My childhood was so tough. So I was telling my counselor about it, and he said, you know one thing? And this was like over 30 years ago, and I still remember what he said. Just because the cause of the pain is different doesn't mean it doesn't feel the same.
Right.
Just like, so my dad blew his brains out and her dad didn't go to her softball games. It doesn't mean it doesn't feel the pain isn't the same.
So
I've always remembered that for my whole life. Like somebody's complaining about something now, like, you know, maybe you have to be more empathetic, I guess.
Of course. And that makes complete sense. You just, though, if you tell an average guy like me, someone's like, you're average. If you tell someone, if you tell someone that same thing that you just said, first of all, I can't imagine the horrors of losing a father like that. And you just said blowing his brains out. And to me, that's the most descriptive thing that it's shocking to me. And you're so right now, you're so open and so friendly and so matter of fact that I know that you've been through a lot of through a hell. And then for what you to say about what that gal was telling you about how her father never went to dances or anything that she was involved in, it really is kind of just as sorrowful. You know, she had a father. Yeah. She had a father who was not a father to her. And there's so many stories like what you just said was perfect just a second ago. You know, going through empathy for people who are still just going through pain. You know, so I applaud you for being honest on that, and I hope I didn't bring any pain out by asking you this, by asking you that question. Now, when you're go ahead. Sorry. No, you go ahead.
Well, it was finally, like 2 years ago, I started trauma therapy.
Oh, okay.
And that was the first time that I've ever been to any kind of therapist over this whole thing.
Wow.
And so that's, like, I thought I had daddy issues, but getting to talk to my therapist and everything, that's why I wanted to bring up relationships. It was like, because being married to a narcissist is nothing compared, or having your father commit suicide and all that, is nothing compared to being married to somebody that you cannot please or cannot ever do anything right.
Like, and yeah, we're going to talk about
that.
The
root of all the problems.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a second, because I can only imagine what you're just alluding to is no matter what you do, no matter how you do it, there's no pleasing that person. Am I right or am I wrong?
No. Exactly. And so I see a bunch of posts on Facebook all the time talking about guys that are narcissists.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to bring it up, because there's guys out there that are just like in my situation that are like, you know, 6'3", 250 pounds, and then they're being dominated when they go home. Their women are taking their masculinity away, and, you know, it's really sad. And that's why there's no word out there for these guys. And that's why I wanted to...
I'll tell you what it is right here, Jay. I'll tell you what it is. You take one of those tough guy or woman, 6'4", 6'5", bodybuilder. Hey, come over here. I got some hot sauce I want you to try. And you just sit there and try it without tearing up in your eyes because, damn it, this hot sauce is mine. Does that mean that? Jay's
got... Yeah, exactly. I love that. That's the best thing in the world. These big old tough guys come up to my table and they're like, oh, I love hot sauce. They're like, okay, here, try it. Then to watch them, like, their eyes water and they're doing the mouth breathing thing. That's just one of my favorites.
Yeah, we're going to break that down in just a minute, folks, on what that meant, that last 30 seconds meant. But let's go back to the recovery place you're at. So you're in there for 5 weeks. And during the day, are you guys doing classes? Are you going through the steps? Are you talking to counselors, things like that?
Yep, we were doing all that. And then there was an old retired Navy guy there, Joe. I remember his name and everything. He was like old crackhead from San Diego. And he was in there. And he's the one that taught me that you got to fake it till you make it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you're like me. In the beginning, when I was going through my recovery place and where I lived and such, if I heard one of those old timers speak, man, I tuned out. I mean, were you into trying to get? Let's just put it this way: mentally, did you want to quit drinking? Were you telling yourself, "Hey, I got to listen to what all these people say," or did you want none of that? Because I wanted none of that.
No, I did. I wanted to, I knew it wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. And then once I got out of treatment, everybody thought that I was going there just for BS, and they had a kegger in my room when I got back.
I know, it's so funny. It's so funny.
And then I was like, no, I'm not. No, I'm quitting drinking, guys. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, my dad used to say, how long do you have to keep going to these classes you're going to? Dad, they're meetings. Well, I mean, can't you just take a pill and then you're done? I mean, can't you? haven't you graduated yet? No, Dad, I tell myself, because I want to, and it's part of my lifestyle now, that I will go to these the rest of my life. Well, you don't need to, do you? I mean, can you drink like non-alcoholic beer? Which is usually the question that normies will ask. They say, can you drink a non-alcoholic beer? For some people, they can. But for me, I can't. And I'll tell you why in just a few. It's too close to the real thing, and I don't want to tempt myself. But anyway, it's funny what you said, because some people, they're very proud of you when you get out, and they think that you've recovered. They think you've gotten to this place, you're over whatever you went in there for the first place, and now you're gunned, and now you could probably have a beer or two and drink like a gentleman. Do you ever get that attitude from people, Jay?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So you got out, and where did you go from there?
I went back to my base. I was engaged to a woman Marine. Yeah, we ended up getting married because I had orders to Okinawa. So I got orders. And so if you were married, sometimes you can get what they call an accompanied tour,
right,
where your wife can come with you. Well, they denied my accompanied tour.
Why?
Because I only had a year left, and they wanted me to re-up for another two to put us on a three-year hitch, and I was not having that.
So you had to you had to drift away from your significant other.
The wife was left in Santee. That was when we took over Myanmar.
Wow.
And so I was in Okinawa. I'd been there for about, I don't know, 3-4 months, and she calls me on the phone and says she wants a divorce, and I was like, no, we just got married. What are you talking about?
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, I'm pregnant by another guy.
Hey, by the way, just a rule of thumb for all of you to paint a picture, Santee is a lot like Okinawa, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot. But it was one of the nicer areas. She ended up having to move to El Cajon.
Oh, Santee. Okay, this is all in San Diego. She calls you and she says, well, I'm pregnant. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh,
I had been sober like 6 months at the time. And over in Okinawa, you could drink when you were 20 on base. And I was 20.
Okay.
And so that was my first stop. I went to the ATM, took out max withdrawal, and went to the bar.
But I thought that you wanted to try to stay sober, but that pretty much went out the window, huh?
Out the window. I thought my life was over, but my wife was pregnant by another guy, and you know, it was an excuse to start drinking again.
There you go. You know, but that's a pretty good excuse, don't you think? I mean, I mean, relationships, and that is why they say, you know, and you've heard it many times before too, they often recommend in your first year of sobriety that you try to stay away
from them.
You know, like,
yeah.
You know, and of course that was very easy for me because I don't attract any women. <I'll> just, you know, heck, I've been 15 years sober. Do you think I can find somebody? No, not yet, Bromo. We suggest you stay. We suggest you find someone when you're 20 years sober. Why is that? Because first of all, you don't attract any women. That's why. Oh, okay.
To get Brother Brandon to hook me up. Maybe he needs to hook you up, too.
So here's the thing. No, man, you'll find. So you're a good-looking guy, so listen. So when she tells you that bombshell on the phone, was that pretty much it after that? Were you just blown away? I mean, you're married, right? You guys were married, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so that,
of course.
So that's ended.
Yeah.
Okay.
So fast forward.
Yeah.
I get out. She calls me and wants to pick me up from the airport, and I was like, well, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
So she picks me up. She takes me back to her place, and the whole time she's telling me that she was pregnant by this lawyer guy, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
well,
right.
Come to find out, it was another jarhead.
Get over here.
So when I canceled our joint checking account, she couldn't afford the house in Santee anymore.
Oh, boy.
So she had to move in with this other jarhead. So when I got out, she took me and picked me up, and then I kicked him out of his own house. Like, you do the golf.
Jarhead. And, that name always makes me laugh. Jarhead.
Right? Well, I'm sure you know enough of us. It makes good sense.
I don't have a military background, but I was top on my parents. You'll love this. Anytime I see a man or woman in a uniform, to this day, I'll stop my car and put it on the side of the road and go over and say, listen, thank you for your service. Thank you for what you do for us. My mom, when she was alive, she'd go up and say, can I have a hug?
And, oh, that's so awesome.
And one time she goes up, and I was with her in a Starbucks, and she sees this guy in uniform, and she walks up and goes, listen, thank you for your service. Can I have a hug? Thank you for what you do for us. And he goes, well, I'm a mailman, but sure, go ahead.
Hey, they provide a service as well.
Right. So I don't ask for hugs, but I have great appreciation for the military. But in San Diego's, and as you know, we just talked a lot about San Diego. It's a big military town. But So you take over the house. Accelerate into the point where alcohol started to run your life, because you had gone through that treatment center. And while you were through that, you were motivated to stay sober. In a nutshell, you got out. People tried to woo you with a quick beer or two or a keg or whatever, which is understandable. But you started drinking again because you had your heart broken, which is also understandable. But tell us how the drinking really became a force in your life and became really destructive.
Just all those years, I just would drink. I think whenever we moved to North Dakota,
okay,
that's when I started getting into trouble, because it seemed like the cops here are kind of bored.
Yeah, right.
Well, and you move to a little small town and you act like an idiot.
And what small? Hebron, right? You're in Hebron, right? So did you ever have a DUI or anything like that?
Yes,
I did. Okay.
I was with my son one day, and we were both out booze cruising, and I didn't want him to get in trouble, so so I started driving.
I have never been arrested, but when you got pulled over, were you pretty sure that you were going to be taken away?
I threw the, because we were going down a dirt road, and I had been, I guess the cop had been following me for a long time. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because of the dusty road.
Yeah.
So I pulled over real quick and threw the keys in the back. Like, what are you talking about? I've been sitting here the whole time.
Yeah. We're going to watch the sunset. Well, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, you know.
When the fifth cop showed up with the taser gun, that's when I figured I better straighten my act out. All right, you got me.
So, but Jay, when did you wake up, or when did you realize that you, there's a point in so many alcoholics or drug addicts, there's a point where you hit rock bottom, and you know that phrase, rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately for a lot of people, that's death.
It is.
Ended up on
What do they say? Some people's rock bottoms have a basement?
I've never heard that. And you also know this, rock bottom. God, I want to tell this story so fast. When I was in my first recovery place, the teacher said, look around. And there was 40 of us, all 40 guys. And he says, after a year, the real odds and the facts are, if three of you are still sober, that's what the odds are. Because most of you will be in jail or on the streets or dead. And I used to think, aha, yeah, right. Where's the small violin? This is BS. But that's about true. Because, right, Jay, sometimes the rock bottom is a rock bottom you can't climb out of.
Right, yeah. And I've had, like, just last week I went to a funeral.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Was it a brother, one of us, was just someone?
Yeah. He was in the circles 6 years sober, I think.
Oh, see. Well, hey, do me a favor.
Yeah.
This person that passed, in your mind... In your mind, you know what that feeling is when you relapse. It's so quick and so fast and so powerful. It doesn't matter if you're 20 years sober, right? 25 years sober. That urge and to drink and that feeling that you have of overwhelming, powerless relapse is just mortifying. Yeah. I don't know.
And the way they...
Go ahead.
The way they've taught me... was, like, if you stop drinking, your disease does not stop.
No.
It, like, escalates.
No.
So whenever you start drinking again, you're going to jump up to where you would have been if you had just kept drinking the whole time.
No, I'm so glad you said that, because, listen, people can go 25 years. It's in the book, actually. A guy who had gone 20-something years, and he says to himself, he's driving down the road, and he sees
I know the story.
Little tiny mark, and he pulls over, and he goes, hey, that'd be kind of nice with a shot of milk. Or, you know, vice versa. He puts in his milk. And he's out for like a day and a half, whatever the story is. Here's the thing. You go 20 years sober and you relapse, you're right back. And people go, no, you're not. Like, again, can't you just start drinking slow and have a beer instead of five or six or five glasses of vodka? Yeah, you can start slow, but a day later, you'll be right back where you were before in that vicious cycle.
Yeah. And it's scientifically proven that alcoholics have this, like, something on our brain that if you start drinking again, like, it, I'm not, I wish I could remember the name of it.
You mean
but
wet,
it's like
a wet brain?
Like, kind of like a wet brain. And it's just for alcoholics, though.
I know what you're getting at, and I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor or anything like that. I can tell you what I've told. Some people drink so much that it's called wet brain, and they never return. Their mind is never the same.
Right. This is some kind of chemical that's in your brain that only alcoholics have, and it never goes away.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. Whenever you drink that, it triggers that or whatever. I don't know exactly what happens, but what do they always say that? You quit drinking, and your disease is out in the lobby doing push-ups.
Oh yeah, there's a million of those different expressions. Your disease. Let me ask you this, and I love to ask everybody this: do you ever have any dreams of relapse? Do you ever have any dreams of you drinking?
In the beginning, I did.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first 6 months or so, but I haven't. Like, not lately.
Okay, you know my theory on this, and I apologize to everyone. They're like, "Oh, here he goes again." This is my theory because I've had people say to me. Bromo, that's not good. You know, I tell somebody, man, I tell somebody how real it is. I had a dream last night that I went out and I told myself in my dream, I shouldn't be doing this. And my whole body was shaking and I had a beer and then I had like two, I had ruined 15 years of sobriety. And then I woke up and I went, damn, that was a dream. That wasn't real. Thank God. And in my dreams, I tell myself, have I cheated myself this whole time? Have I really been sober 15 years? Those are dreams. And you know what? I think that's damn good because that's your mind keeping you fresh and keeping you alert. That's your mind saying, hey, buddy, if you think that you've got this thing licked and you don't dream anymore about drinking or relapse, we're right around the corner, like you said. It's that close and tempting and scary.
Well, yeah. Like it was about 3 months ago.
Yep.
I had a really bad toothache. And I was so close to getting me some whiskey, you know, just to numb the pain. I was having this battle in my head. Uh-huh. And then I was like, you're an idiot. You're going to wake up in jail with a sore tooth.
Why would that be, Jay? Because you tell everybody why that would be, because you would want more, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't stop.
Yeah. Even though you're just trying medically to yourself, hey, medically, this is going to get me. I'm going to get over this toothache. I can do this, right? I deserve this. But it's not true, is it?
No, definitely not.
No, it's not.
And it might not have been that night that I went to jail, but, you know, it would eventually come.
No.
It would.
Exactly what you said. It would eventually come. It might not happen that night or the next day. Mm-hmm. You'd have two shots of whiskey. But I guarantee you within two or three days, you're right back where you were before. The same pattern, mm-hmm. the same doom, you know? So listen, think back to what made you say to yourself, I've got to do this for myself. No more. Look, I deserve another chance. Think back to when that was and tell us what that was like.
Okay. So the first time I went to treatment, that was in the military. And then, so fast forward back to North Dakota and it was just the ex and I, we used to drink. We were either fighting or having fun, and it turned into where we're just mostly fighting all the time.
Yeah.
And with her being the narcissist, instead of saying, like, you know, maybe we both should go and get some help or something, she's like, no, you're the one, you're the alcoholic, you need to go to treatment, blah, blah, blah. So that was the first time I went to treatment in the civilian world.
So she's an alcoholic.
Well, I can't be the judge of that.
Okay, well, let me put it this way. She had probably, and maybe you had said to her, I need to stop drinking. And she probably said, yeah, you do. But would it piss you off that she would go, hey, Jay, you need to stop drinking or don't drink around me anymore. Try it. Stop it. And then she'd go and drink. That would make you mad because she was able to drink, right? And you weren't.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
See? Yeah, that's what happened to me.
So that was back when they had family day.
Yeah.
And I had this old counselor. Even Brother Brandon talks about him, Dick. He's the one that he saw right through her BS.
Oh, did he?
And he wanted to come to that family day and just rip me apart, you know? And he's like, well, what's your part in this?
Yeah.
And all she didn't want, she did not want to hear any of that, you know, and she stormed up out of there.
You know why that is, don't you, Jay? It's kind of like those Exorcist movies or anything like that, where the priest, not the priest, where the devil doesn't want to be around someone that's carrying a cross. And I'm being a little elaborate here. I'm being a little bit too emotional. But what I'm talking about is those people who have had life experience and have been sober for a long, long time, and here comes this person coming along who starts spewing out this and this and this and that and lying about their drink, and they can see right through them.
Yeah, of course. And that was like, it was kind of, I don't know how to explain it, kind of justified, you know, like.
Yep. I do.
Like, I knew this whole time that it wasn't just me. And I would tell her, it's not just me. And
right.
Like, no, it's all you. Like, no.
So then how did you break away? And did you go, you went to another place for recovery?
Yeah, I actually went to New Freedom Center.
Oh, awesome. Tell everybody what that's like. What's it called again?
New Freedom Center.
New Freedom Center. Okay. Where's this at?
Yep. It's in Bismarck.
New Freedom Center. How come I never...
Yeah, Josh Olson runs it. That's where Brother Brandon went.
Okay.
And he has the, what are those, Tied for Second Sober Living Homes as well.
Oh, got it. Okay, how long were you there for?
I went to New Freedom actually 3 times total.
No, but, oh, three different... Time, okay, then you relapsed.
3 different times.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And then the ex, I came back, and she was on those bath salts.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
And she was like blaming me for bugs in the bed and all.
Oh,
that. Like,
boy.
Oh, gosh. And I was like 90 days sober, and I was like, nope. And I that's when I used to work for Fisher, so we would work out of different towns all the time. So I'm like, I'm just gonna go to work. And yeah, so I went to work and got a motel the night before and got myself a bottle and just went to town again, like justifying my drinking by blaming, I'm married to a psychopath.
So each time you relapsed, each time you relapsed, Jay, a big part of it was your frustrations with was this your wife or girlfriend?
Yeah, she was my wife.
Wife, okay.
I got remarried again to that woman in California.
Okay, so this frustrating part with her, in your mind, drove you to drink. So you had been to this recovery place. So when you got there again for the third time, did anybody come up to you and say, hey, what makes us think that you're ready this time to surrender? Did anyone ever say that to you? Because you'd been back.
No. Nobody said that. They welcomed me back with open arms. There was actually somebody there. I guess I better not go there with that.
No, that's okay. You don't have to. Here's what I'm asking. Here's what I'm saying. Yeah. What I was trying to say is, I'm not trying to say they were sarcastic or anything, but I had a counselor.
Oh.
I had the same kind of thing, Jay, where I had an outpatient thing, and I relapsed. And when I was on my run for 3 or 4 days or whatever it was, I had to go back and go to, what is it when you got to go to the hospital to detox? I went to detox. Got sent back to the same outpatient thing. My counselor says, well, what makes me think you're ready this time? Because the first time I obviously wasn't. So my question to you was, did anyone say to you in your times there in and out, did anyone ever pull you aside and say, hey, how are you feeling now? Are you ready? Are you ready to surrender 100%? That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, nobody. I kind of did that to myself, I think, actually. Because the 2 times before, I never got a sponsor.
Right.
And this time that I went, I was like, the very first meeting.
Yeah.
And that's how much things have changed in Bismarck, too, though.
Okay.
Was at the meeting I went to, they're like, and if anybody's willing to sponsor, raise your hand. And that was the first time I'd ever seen that before. And so it made it so much easier for me.
Oh, sure.
And I went up to the first gray-haired guy I saw. Like, he got to be a little sober longer than me. But,
Yeah, you know what? It's I've said this before. Finding a sponsor is so personal. You can go through one. You can go through three or four until you find the right one. And that is your own personal right, because you have to be so comfortable with that sponsor. And when you started doing the steps, did you start realizing there is a way out if I rip off my title? And did you start seeing the wonders of the steps?
Absolutely, yes. And then I actually got rid of that sponsor, and then I got one that was part of the Knights of North Dakota, Novak Knights.
Yep.
And so I saw that, and that's I wanted to be part of that.
Yeah. You know what? So, you know what? Also, another of my favorite questions that I'll ask you, and I remember this clear as a bell, and it's one of my favorite memories, is I remember the day that I thought to myself, you know what? And someone pointed out to me, by the way, someone said to me, it appears to me that the obsession has been lifted on you. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, you haven't talked about drinking or thought about it all day long in our conversation and the last couple of days. And it appears to me the obsession has been lifted on you. And I said to myself, this is the greatest feeling in the world. I don't feel compelled, or I don't feel that haunt and that urge to go and think about even trying to drink. Do you remember that level right. You got to where you said you were so comfortable with yourself being sober?
Yeah, and I think, you know what, the major part of that is the sponsor that I got the second time, he made me get on my knees.
Yep.
And then he suggested that I do it every morning.
That's right.
Then do the third step prayer, and that's what I don't think I've missed maybe one or two days of praying.
Oh, we did the third step
in the last
every
2 years.
Yep. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me in the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness
to those that I would help with
thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Isn't that something? That is the greatest. Yeah, we said that all the time.
I love that one.
Yeah, and mine favorite too. And now that you've been sober for over 2 years, since April, I am sure that you've run across people that you see that are new, that are just new into the program, just off the streets, whatever. Someone that's been brought to a meeting for the first time. When you see that in a man or a woman, how much of yourself do you see, and do you just what kind of feeling is that to you when you see that now, when you see a newcomer?
Yeah, it keeps it fresh in your head.
It really does.
Yeah, it does.
Does it bring back
and
a thousand?
2 years not drinking is nothing really, but
it is.
Yeah, somebody that
never say that
came from
never say that, Jay. Never.
Right.
And I both know.
But when you see somebody that's just coming off the streets, you're like,
Oh yeah. Well, you can relate. I mean, you know that feeling, right? That loneliness and that despair. And listen, don't ever slight yourself for what you have. Because remember, every day is a gift.
It is,
and you have to be on, you know, prepared for battle. You know, all these dramatic things, but it's so true. You have to understand how easily it is to relapse. So you could be in the worst mood. You could be in the greatest mood. You could have just won the lottery, and someone says, "Hey, let's take a shot real quick. Come on, Jay, you've got this." You've gone over 2 years without drinking. You're not going to fall overboard on this. It doesn't matter. The thing is that you will, because your mind says, don't.
But then I won't, because I don't have friends like that.
Right. No, that's a good thing. And we haven't talked about this. Now, let's talk about real quick, that you had said you would talk about. It is true. When you're with the wrong person, when you're with someone that's a narcissist, when you're with somebody that you cannot please, and I'm not a psychiatrist at all, but I've had some things like this happen, it's got to be a tough thing to pull yourself out of, because you care about that person, but there's nothing else you could do to make that person happy, right?
Right, and like my therapist told me, she said, there is no cure for a narcissist. They're like... Even if they go to therapy, like she said, I can't even cure. It's like, there's like something different in their brain. They're wired different. And there's no, if you're the scapegoat of their problems, you will be their scapegoat until the day that you die.
Yeah, I think you're a wonderful guy for being so open and honest, because what you're doing with me is you're being kind of therapeutic. I am not a counselor by any means, and you know that. And you're talking to me like a fellow bro, you know, that knows what it's like to be sober. When you talk to your therapist, and you don't have to tell me anything, because it is a guarded issue, it's a private thing, but do you ever talk about your drinking with her or him?
Oh yeah, of course. That was. Suggested to go there by the New Freedom Center.
Okay, good. Absolutely.
Was a nurse, and so she knows this lady, and she is just the best. She's one of the best trauma therapists out there. I do that. I used to. We haven't really done a session lately. We just pretty much talk now. But when I first started, I was doing that EMDR.
Yeah.
Where you hold those paddles.
Yeah.
And they vibrate left and right, and it kind of. My therapist calls it voodoo therapy.
Right.
But it does. Like, there's these past traumas that I've gone through, and, like, I can think about it now, and it just doesn't affect me the same way that it used to.
Right.
Like, I know my father's suicide had something, you know, to do with my drinking as well.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I have a friend that would come over and say, man, you need to go to a therapist, because any time that I talk to you about it, he used to be like my bishop, and he said that, anytime that you get drunk, you talk about your dad all the time, you know, and I'm like, oi, did not realize that.
Well, yeah.
So I started doing the EMDR therapy, and I breezed through my dad past trauma quickly.
Yeah.
But then we got hung up on the ex-wife.
Yeah.
And that's where she said, yeah, I thought I had daddy issues, but she said, no, that woman, she kind of molded. Because I met her when I was 22 years old, and she was 25.
Yeah.
So right away, it was like she had that age advantage on me where she was already smarter than me and been to college and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, so she already held this over my head. And so I was always trying to please her, always. And I helped raise her three sons, and then we ended up having three daughters together. Yeah. And so that's, I was always constantly changing.
You can't take that lightly. Look, she did a lot of damage on you, and, you know, you still care about her, don't you?
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
But, like, I just ran into her the first time in, like, 2 years last week.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get my stuff back because I needed a saw. Like, I got rewarded all my tools in the divorce.
Right.
And I wanted to use the saw that I had just bought, and I finished the flooring in the house that she kicked me out of.
Yeah.
And I wanted that saw back so I could do the flooring in the house that I live in now. And she comes out and, like, how dare you bring Bella into this? Went off on me, and, like, so she's like, you can come get it tomorrow. And then when I got home, she started sending me all these mean texts and, like,
yeah, of course,
you gave up your right to these tools whenever you said blah, blah, blah. And, oh, man. And then I'm still kind of, like, I've been praying and meditating and trying to, like, because I know holding negative thoughts is not good for us.
Yeah.
Because it brings more of what we don't want. So I've been trying to, like, just let it go and let it go. And it's just, like, it's in the back of my head this whole time. Like,
well, it sounds to me like you're moving forward and you're working on it. And you know what? Stay strong, Jay, with your sobriety. And that sounds to me like you're doing a great job. What are you doing these days? You go to your, you go hang with Brother Brandon. Tell everybody what you can. You said, before we got on the air, you said you'd be comfortable with telling everybody how you and I met and what kind of business you run, because it is a hot business.
My son and I, we used to do survivor challenges on YouTube where we'll take, like, a fishing pole, a water filter, and, like, a sleeping bag and go live off the land for a few days.
Good grief. You would never, ever catch me doing that.
Yeah. So, what was it? The first year I put, like, some garlic and pepper and salt in a little jar for the fish that we catch.
Okay.
And so the second year I was like, man, I'm from Arizona, so I like a little heat. So I'm like, I kind of started cruising the internet, and I found this thing called adobo seasoning.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, ooh, that sounds kind of good. So what I did was I took a generic adobo recipe, and I added, like, some Carolina Reaper to it to kick it up a little bit, and then I added more garlic because I like that, and I added a little bit more cumin, just things that I like, and I added, and I, you know, and we took it out fishing. It was really good on fish, and so my son was like, Dad, you need to, like, sell this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah. So I started taking it to work with me, and everybody, oh, man, this stuff's so good. You need to sell this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
So I went to, I took it to a farmer's market one day.
Uh-huh.
And I totally bombed. I think I sold, like, 8 jars. And I was just totally discouraged. Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So I think that was before I went back to treatment.
Okay.
So the whole time I'm in treatment, I'm like, maybe I should do something with this business and, you know, just try to do that over. And so I was bouncing it off the group, and they're like, oh, yeah, you should do that. You should do that.
Yeah.
So that was when I got out of treatment. I could have went back to the Brickyard, and I was like, no, I don't want to have anything to do with that negativity. I'm just going to see if I can make it.
Right.
And, you know, because I got nothing to lose. I've already lost everything, basically.
Yeah.
And so I went to the Gateway Mall one day. And I ran into this nice old lady. She just passed away a couple weeks ago. But anyway, Connie. And she said, okay, so they're having a swap meet at the Sears building. Do not pay for that. She said, here's Andrew's number for the manager of the Gateway Mall. You call him. You can sit right outside that Sears building and sell to everybody turning around, wanting to pay the cover charge to go in there.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I think I sold, like, I don't know, 40, 50 jars that I was so happy. And yeah, it just kind of evolved from there to where I had like vendor friends. Like when I first started doing the vendor show, like I didn't have a tablecloth. I just had like a stack of t-shirts and original seasoning.
Sure.
That's all I had.
What's your business? And, what's your business called?
It's called J Dobo.
J Dobo, D-O-B-O, correct?
Yes, sir.
J-A-Y-D-O-B-O. Can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, jdobo.com.
Jdobo.com. And they can see the product?
Of course, yeah. And they can order it. If they go onto my Facebook page, jdobo.co, they can find recipes and everything to go with it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I was watching people walk over. And then I watched people as I walked away with that little sample you gave me. And someone said, oh, you should try the blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I should. Oh, my God, it's so good. And that's how these things work. It's word of mouth. That's the most powerful thing.
It sure is. I get that all the time. Like, my buddy told me I got to come try your crackers. And that the whole cracker thing, that was just a fluke by accident. Because I was at the Gateway Mall when I did the farmer's market. I would be outside grilling chicken and stuff like that.
Oh, God.
So when I went in the mall, I was like, how do I, like, I was like pouring it in little cups and letting people, like, you know, stick their finger in there. I got to come up with something better than this, you know. And I just happened to stumble across, like, this cracker recipe.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds like everything that's in my seasoning. Maybe I'll just put my seasoning and see how it goes. And it's that, those crackers have been a game changer, I tell you.
Well, I'll tell you, you could put this on anything, except maybe your two-year token that he has in his pocket. Don't put it on that. You carry that with you wherever you go, don't you?
Of course, yeah. And then if I get thirsty, I was told to put it in my mouth. And if it dissolves, then I can have a drink.
Oh, really? I have never heard that. That's funny. Listen, how proud are you of that token and the symbol that it means a lot, doesn't it?
It sure does, yeah.
That's your way of life now. And you should be proud of yourself. And I know that there's issues that you're going through and this and that, and you're seeing people. But as you gather and go through life, you've got new friends now with Brother Brandon and myself and other people that know the struggles you've been through, and we all go through. And look how your life is now. It's got to be so rewarding.
It is. It's the, what are they, the promises or whatever?
Yeah, it's all. It's just all a gift.
It is.
That's all I can say. Go ahead.
And I think the most important part of the whole, you know, going into meetings and stuff like that was finding my spirituality.
Oh, of course. And
to me, replacing that booze, that empty feeling with, you know, my higher power is just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. You couldn't have said it any better, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. This is Jay. Jay Dobo is his business. Jay and then D-O-B-O. Look him up on Google. Look him up and order some of his stuff. I tell you, you will love it. And also, you can get a hold of them through Facebook if you find them there. But listen, Jay, I sure appreciate you giving us some time.
Of course, Bromo.
Do you want to tell anybody some last words on if anybody is thinking to themselves, you know what, maybe I have an issue with it. Is it worth seeking out? Is it worth changing my life? Do you have any words for that?
Yeah, If you think you got a problem, you probably do.
Yeah, true.
And if you don't think you got a problem, go out and drink again. See what happens.
And you'll know.
If you get in trouble, then you'll know.
You'll know. And how much of this life, this new life of yours, is so worth it? Tell people what it's like to be in control of your life.
It's night and day. It is. It's just I can't even explain it. Like, there's no way that my business would have taken off the way it has if I would have been drinking.
Yeah.
I just know for a fact. I'd still be over at the Brickyard being a miserable, sad sack, you know? Just
no, I totally
I always try to stay positive, but, you know, there's just so much negativity in that. But that's why I wanted to get on my own, and then I can spread my positive energy around versus, you know, trying to fight off negative energy all day.
Yeah, I love that. Spread my positivity around. That's your title. That's the title you just gave me for your podcast. Jay, hang on real quick, okay? Thank you, buddy, for coming
on.
Hang on with me real quick. And that is the wonder. That's the amazement. That's what happens when somebody changes their life around. And this is another example of how if you feel that you're on the wrong road, if you feel you're like your life is headed towards, well, a bottom, like we talked about earlier, there is a way out. For anyone who feels a family member or themselves, or maybe someone who's reached out to you saying, I need some help, there is a way out.